You know, we kind of picked back up in our Israel, Genesis series last week, along with some current things, and I was going to keep going, and I was kind of going to do the same thing, but so much has happened this week in Israel and around the world, including the United States, that I have decided to, so I started making a few slides just to show a few things. And, you know, before I was done, I got so many slides, I think it's going to take the whole time. So we're going to kind of hone in really on a prophecy update today with regard to current events, because it's things, I wouldn't do this and take our time for this if I didn't think we need to know it. But I think it's important that we understand what's going on out there. I'm not talking politically now, I'm talking spiritually, things that are tied to the Word of God. In fact, you can turn, it'll be a while before we get there, but just so you can find your place. We're going to be in Daniel 11 in just a little while, and I'll show you a couple things and everything we're talking about is tied to the Word of God. Of course, we're first in our series talking about the events that have happened because of the United States over the years, and we started early and really primarily 1981 and a little bit in the Jimmy Carter years in 76. Got all the way up to 2016, as you know. And then because 2016 was the Trump years, and because, of course, 2020, Biden and Harris, that we got in, you know, I'm really not trying to do a political thing. So I'm trying to do a scriptural thing with regard to Israel. So I decided to hold those last 8 years until right after the election. That way there won't be any confusion over that. But Trump did have a plan. He had a plan as well. That's his plan for peace in Israel. And he did a lot of other things. This one, God probably wasn't too happy with. Other things he did, I think God probably was happy with. But, you know, and we've talked about that with all presidents, some good and bad things that they have done. And that'll be the case also for the Biden-Harris. But again, I'm going to get into all that later. I just give you that one just so you know that there's things out there, there's quite a bit out there, and it'll take us a couple weeks to go through it all. We'll start that later on in November. I showed this slide last week, and I don't really like to show slides twice. There's one or two more in here that I showed last week that just are springboards. But this is just to say that when people say that we're in the end times, there's still, that is true, I believe it's true, but there's still a lot of stuff to go. And we believe what's next on the calendar is the rapture. That is true, but it is also true that some of the prophecies in the Bible could take place before the rapture occurs. There's a list here of wars, Psalms 83, Ezekiel 38 and 39, the Daniel war, we'll see. Daniel probably will not occur until after the rapture, but nevertheless, we're going to look at it because things are setting up that way. But I think we are close to setting up for Psalm 83. In fact, if God wanted to, you know, things are in a shape right now that we could. And that's the reason I was going through Genesis and still am, is because I want to talk about some of the things that the Bible prophesies in the Old Testament that we will see also in Psalm 83 for that war. But I hadn't quite got to it yet, but I'm moving hard as I can in that direction. And that's where we're going. Could I explain that slide in some detail last week? I won't say any more except to say that we still should be aware, no matter what we talk about and what we say the Lord's setting up for, that the rapture of the church age could be over at any time. And then God can start on these other events. Or in one or two cases here, God could actually initiate those events and complete one or two of these events, like Psalm 83, like Ezekiel. Before the rapture, he could do that. And, you know, on some of these things, he didn't give us the exact moment and time. So I'm going to start with a couple things in just religious. I don't get up and criticize, you know, somebody's religion. That's not what I do either. But I just had to rebuke this. Not, I will not be rebuking it, but use God's word to rebuke it, because I heard this and I listened to it. You could see the slide up here where it says Pope Francis called all religions are a path to God. That's what he said. I heard the thing. I was surprised that he said that, because Jesus said what? Jesus said, no, there's only one. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. Now that's a clear distinction on what was said this past week by the Pope. Completely clear. All religions do not lead to the Father. They do not. It would be one thing if they did, and you could say, well, then probably everybody eventually is going to heaven and so forth, but that's not the case. Jesus made that clear, and I just thought, you know, since that was out, and it's kind of out there, that I would just stand up for what the Lord had to say, and you can find that, of course, in John 14. There's going to be a lot of activity in the U.S. this week. The United Nations General Assembly is meeting in New York this week. It's a high-level meeting. This is a meeting where they will get there, and they're already there, in fact, and they're going to, you know, come out with some stuff. This is not just a Security Council. This is usually all the heads of states show up, so that the presidents of the various countries. What is strange this year is many of them are not coming, and it's very unusual that in a U.S. president's last year, that a bunch of guys don't show up and shake hands with the president of the U.S. they've served with for these years, and a lot are not. And I'm just surprised, not surprised that Putin's staying home or that Xi and China is staying home, but there's quite a number. The U.K., head of U.K., I could list many, many countries that normally come, and they're going to send somebody, but the presidents are not coming. Who is coming is Zelensky to ask for more money for Ukraine, and the president of Iran is already here. And he's already meeting with people and discussing certain things, and you can read about that. It's clear. But Iran is very active, and I'm going to talk about them later on as we go. And, of course, they are active, and Russia is very active. They got people here. Putin is not, but around. And of course, Zelensky, this war over there is really heating up. This happened this week. There was a strike by Ukraine into the country of Russia, far in there, that did enough damage. It was so powerful that it measured on the Richter scale, like an earthquake. And I think the number escapes me. I should have written it down here, like about a 2 point something maybe, or I think it was less than 3, but still a reasonably sized earthquake. By the way, how many of you felt that earthquake that about 4 or 5 days ago? Okay, we got one or two people felt that. We were sitting there, and was that Thursday or so? And maybe a few days ago, anyway. And we didn't feel a thing. I didn't even knew a thing. But Donna said something about it, and then she started seeing people that were feeling it. That thing happened, you know, south, and people were feeling it all the way in the north, a little bit north of here. So anyway, back on the subject here. And so I'm sure they felt this in some places in Russia. The war is heating up. Of course, Zelensky is wanting to, I mentioned this last week, he wants to use these long-range weapons that have been provided to him by the UK. He wants to use them to attack long-range targets inside Russia. Because those particular weapons are made with U.S. parts, they also have part of the deal was that we would know where those are going to be used, and so we have not, as of yet, as far as I know, and I checked as even yesterday, at least it's not out that we have agreed, and it looks like to me so far we have not agreed to do that. If we do, it will greatly escalate the war, and needs to be, I think. You know, because we're in an election cycle, everybody's talking about the election, but nobody's talking about some of these events that are pretty important to us. I mean, to make that decision, I'm not trying to get on one side of the fence or the other. I'm just saying that's an important thing. People need to consider, you know, the consequences of it, and we'll see. The Canadian Prime Minister, he came out this week and said that Canada fully supports it. Quite a few others have come out and said that they fully support it. But Russia has come out and said, if you do that, it's going to lead to a nuclear exchange. And, you know, he does have nuclear weapons, and I'm going to talk a little more about that as we go. But the point is that, you know, we just need to understand the consequences of things. This is from the Jerusalem Post, Canadians' betrayal of Israel, irresponsible and shameful. That's an opinion piece, but Canada is also a little bit like the U.S. in that slow walking some of the supplies and things that that were promised to Israel, that Israel is actually purchasing. And every week we hear of more and more delays in a lot of those things that we're doing. And what does the Bible say about that? I will bless those that bless thee, curse those that curse thee. And we need to be aware of that. Do we want to be blessed or do we want to be cursed? And that whole series we were going through makes it clear that God meant what he said, doesn't it? And so, you know, I just, we need to pray for our leaders that they make they make decisions based on spiritual things. Very few do, but that would be nice and important to do. The Russians went to Iran and met with the Iranians this week. It was, of course, announced, and the U.S. and U.K. had concerns over the nuclear deal, and they're not talking about Russia getting a nuclear weapon here. Russia has them. What they're talking about is Russia, you know, Iran makes a lot of drones and a lot of equipment, and Russia wants some of that equipment for their war with Ukraine. And the worry is that Russia has promised Iran technology or understanding how to finish their nuclear bomb. And that would put the world on edge. And so all this is happening, and yet it's not front page news. It should be, but it's not. And because there should be, you know, public perception on something like this, because it's going to affect us all if that's kind of where what we get into. We saw the verse in Zechariah when we were going through verse by verse the book of Zechariah, and we've seen some things to indicate that in the last days something, you know, doesn't say nuclear arms, but what is described there based on our limited knowledge of such a thing looks like that's going to be involved at some point. Hopefully not yet, but that's where things are kind of headed. Now, this came out this week. Interesting. Putin demands that scientists develop a treatment to save 175,000 lives by 2030 while average life expectancy in Russia falls. He wants them to, he put out an urgent notice for scientists in Russia to send all their information into the Kremlin so they can understand how to extend Russia's lifespan. Right now, the average Russian lifespan is 72. And guess how old Putin is? 71. So he wants to, you know, raise that ceiling a little bit, I guess, is what he's doing. The U.S., I looked this up just because I was curious. In the U.S., it's 81. So you can see, I mean, they're 72, average life expectancy. We're 81. You know, that's 9 years. 9 years difference, quite a bit. I could tell them a couple things. Quit sending all your boys to war, because it's average. You know, it's average life. I mean, that the 500,000 or so that he's lost in that war, I mean, that has an effect on the average. And really, doesn't really have to do with people's lifestyles and their habits. It's just that affects their life expectancy. Something that they do in Russia to a huge extent that does affect their lifespan, and the great reason that there's 9 years difference, is vodka. And if he just told them, I mean, some of those guys just need to send back a note and say, hey, you know, I mean, shut it down. And that over time, that'll save a lot of lives and increase the lifespan. So I would say in Russia, the women, so the average man lives to 67, average woman 78. And so the women are already quite a bit ahead. In the U.S., the same, not exactly like that, but it's the same kind of thing. Ladies, average 83, men 78. And so there was 5 years difference in here in the U.S. as well. So Russia's wanting them to, and then Russia, Putin came out, and he says this all the time because he's figured out that, and I talk about demographics all the time. I'm going to get on that subject again today because sometimes when we talk about prophecy, we think it's only with the group like we've got right here. But in just a few short years from now, the demographic laws are going to come to play, and different players are going to be dealing with each other just because there's not going to be, Germans in the future. I mean, not very many because they're not having children. It just, that's the way it works, you know. And so Putin is a lot of anger from the, especially the Russian younger people and women, but he wants the families, he tells the women to have large, large families. And it, because I tell you, it takes a long time to turn around. If you look, I didn't put it up here. I could have pulled a demographic chart for Russia. There's a site I would give you, but I forgot it. I don't have it offhand. But you can put any country in there and look at the demographics, men and women and the age groups. And, of course, what you want is a lot of young people. And then, the older you get, the fewer. Now, we're upside down in the U.S., but more square. So we're reasonable. Russia, Italy, Germany, to some extent Japan, although they're trying to correct. Some of those countries like that are far, far underweight. And he knows that, and he knows that. And that's the reason he's letting a lot of immigrants in and doing things to try to just hold things together. But the toll of that war, plus their demographics, is causing huge problems for them, and even now, but it's going to be seen acutely in just a few years. I pulled this one because I want to talk about this just a little more as I start moving over now to the Mideast. This is worldwide population, and so we're over here in about 2024. So we're already on this curve that's really going down. When it hits here, that's 0.1%. In other words, when you consider, it takes more than, if two people have two children, it actually takes a little more than that, to say that you're going to replace them with two because of uncertain, unexpected things that happen. So not everybody lives a normal lifespan. Not everybody lives long enough to have children. And so you can't just say, if everybody has two, it will always remain the same. You have to have about 2.3 or something like that to be able to. So here's 2.1. So we're already at the point we're not able to, as a world population, to maintain our population. This was a long time ago. That was about 1960. Way out here, we're going to start shrinking worldwide. There are some places, like we talked about last week, that are growing, and I just found this interesting. I wanted to build on it a little bit from last week. Now, on my next chart, before I put it up here, just this is the goofy one, where I had the computer make the geography of a nation fit with their population by 2050. Now, this one, it goes out to 2100. I'm going to show you one later that goes out to, I think, I put it in here, but that goes out to 2100. This next one is not very long from now. I mean, we're 2024. We're staring 2025 in the face, and it's not long till 2050. Many people in here, depending on how old you are, many people are going to make it in this room, Even in a senior adult class, so if the Lord doesn't come back, we'll make it to 2050. In 2050, so the geography shrinks of the U.S. and Canada is basically gone. And I just, again, adjusted the land size based on population so that you could see in 2050 where the people are going to be. And where they're going to be is this part of Africa, well, this whole side of Africa, that is the Mideast and India. India and some of the Asian, this Indonesia. I mean, Asia, Africa. I mean, this is going to shrink, greatly shrink, which is a little surprise. Mexico, by the way, is pretty much holding its own in comparison. But Europe's gone. Russia's gone. Now, when I say gone, that doesn't, I'm not predicting they're going to be gone in completely, that every Russian is going to be gone in the next 25 years. But I'm talking about as a, it will not be like it is today. It will not be. You know, you make those predictions, and we're live streaming this, and it lasts a while, and so you can, you know, so I try not to make predictions, because somebody, some of you are so mischievous, you'll pull it back up and say, well, you said this, you know, which is what I did. By the way, I decided not to show it. I thought it wasn't relevant, but, you know, I saw one clip yesterday from John Kerry when he was Secretary of State in, I want to say this happened in about 2008 or something like that. It's 2008. It was a good while ago, and I saw him. I watched it, so you wouldn't have to. Basically, he said in 5 years, this would have been 15 years ago roughly, 5 years, the Arctic cap is going to be gone, he said. And he went through all the ramifications of that, and nothing up there but water, and it's going to, you know, absorb the sun instead of reflecting it, and you know, all climate change, and he went through it in 5 years. Well, that hasn't happened yet, you see, but I just throw that out completely for free. This is who we're dealing with. Now, that country right there is Nigeria, that big one, Nigeria. I just want you to keep that in mind. This is Nigeria right here today. We'll see in a map in a second, this is heavy Christian region right in here. It's interesting to me that, in fact, Nigeria is going to be one of, this heavy Christian nation is going to be one of those that makes tremendous, and they're already large, and they've got a lot of children, and they're having more children, large, you know, population. India also. I mean, if you said the two big ones, that's going to be what's coming. And why do I show this? Why am I even on this? Well, Iran is not, I mean, some of the people they're meeting with now and some of the things they've been doing, you know, we've seen this map. This is Middle East, so that's Israel right there. All these red dots are the fronts that Israel is fighting. And I went through them last week, but Iran and Yemen, Iraq, Syria and Lebanon both, the what's called the West Bank, Jordan itself, and of course, Hamas there in Gaza. All those. They're fighting all those fronts, seven or eight fronts, eight, I think. And so, just for the record here, all of that is essentially all that is financed by Iran, one way or the other. We are financing some of it, by the way. We don't want to, but I mean, it's just we send in aid and it doesn't go the right spot. And we are. So you would think they'd have their hands full and enough to do, but no. Iran now is, I think I messed up there. Sorry. Now we got to go through the whole. Apologize, that was my fault. John, you need to make sure I keep my finger on the right button here. I'm just kidding. Wasn't your fault. So what are they doing? So what Iran is pivoting to Africa as well. And they're going to pick up some support in Africa, especially kind of this region, but some of these others on this side. And, I mean, how are they doing that? I mean, that's kind of the first question. I mean, that is, what do you talk about, a game changer and in the war with Israel to pick up something, you know, the huge population like that. And so we will watch that because Africa, you know, it wasn't just very many years ago. Africa wasn't in our news at all. And it's still basically not, but I'm just telling you, it is coming. Now, this is not, I know you probably can't read that. I'm going to read it to you. But so you'd know that it's not me saying that and giving you this report. I'm not trying to be political. I'm just trying to tell you what happened. And so this is from the Wall Street Journal. So I'm quoting, and I just put the exact, I just copied and pasted the exact article. So you know, well, he didn't make something up here, because I'm not trying to. But Iran's economy was crippled under the weight of sanctions and isolation, high inflation, and a plummeting currency, exacerbating the country's internal struggles. The Trump administration's sanctions had cut off Iran from the global financial system, making it difficult for the regime to fund its regional ambitions. With domestic unrest on the rise, Iran seemed more inclined to avoid external escalation. That was until 3 years ago. 3 years ago, Biden administration reversal of the Trump-era sanctions in 2021, Iran's fortunes changed. Basically, they stopped the sanctions. Biden stopped the sanctions, not being political, I'm giving the facts. And so Iran started pumping oil again and being able to sell it in global markets. So now they got millions all of a sudden. I mean, they're dealing with money. And so what do? They finance all these wars with Israel. And so if you want to know the root cause of the issues that we've got going on now, it is because those sanctions were dropped and Iran is now pumping oil and are using that money to spread discord, especially in the Middle East. But it is happening, things are happening everywhere, now spreading even to Africa. And so just that, I mean, can make a huge, huge change in the world that we live in. Now, speaking of Africa and their interest in Africa, this is a map of the Arab nations in 540 AD, 540. This is the Arabs. So it's not a surprise. This is 500 years after Christ's walk, and the Arabs are all on the Arabian Peninsula. So here's where Saudi Arabia is and Yemen and all the stuff we talk about in here a lot. So that's the Arabian Peninsula, and so all the Arabs are there. By the way, Arab does not mean Islamic. Just to give you a quick definition, I know you all, most in here understand. Arab is like an ethnic thing. In other words, they descended from that place right here, the Arabian Peninsula in that area. And that's where the Arabs came from. Islam is a religion. So some Arabs are Islamic and some are not. As far as Islam, some again are Arab, but many are not. And so it's sort of two different things, and it's important not to get those mixed up. But I want to show you the growth of the Arab people from five generations, 500 years after Christ walked on this earth to today, basically today. And you can see that, yeah, they showed up all over northern Africa, didn't they? Right in this area. Not down here. I'll show you later, but this, especially right down in here, but all of this is a heavy Christian area. Now, so the Arab, now some of these are, I'm sure, Christians also, but these three nations right here. Let's go to Daniel chapter 11 for just, let me go to a couple more slides. I think I got, let me go to a couple more slides till I, by the way, when I say these things, and we look at today, who's on this side of the fence and who's on this, just keep in mind, Jesus died for everybody. And we send missionaries to a lot of these lots of countries if we can get somebody in there. And I said last week that one thing I have noticed, just I don't know if this is happening everywhere, I notice it happening in our church, that more and more missionaries, not all, I mean, we're going to talk about Colin and Callie tonight, today, I guess, and tonight, especially, going to England. So not all are going to Africa, but we've had quite a few come through here that are headed to Africa. I believe that the Lord is working there in these last days. Jesus died for everybody, and the answer to all this, the answer that this, just so I'm clear here, is not somebody cutting off sanctions or putting on sanctions. The answer to this is Jesus Christ, isn't it? I mean, that's the reason we're here talking about this today. This is the other slide I showed you last week where certain African lawmakers, it was a pretty large summit for many countries, declared a faith-based support for Israel. That is huge, and that's quite a bit difference, and that is standing up but really against the rest of the world when those African nations do that. This is a slide that I pulled it for this week. I think it was done this week. I don't see the day. I forgot. I cut it off some way, but African countries register the highest growth in Christianity globally amid persecution. This is happens a lot of times. You can look, read in Acts and many other places and look down through history. When the church has faced great persecution, what happens? It scatters and then it grows. And God uses that many times to grow, and that's what's happening in Africa. I would just point out, though, for the record here, you know, over in Africa, churches are being burned. Evangelical churches are being burned. Christians killed and injured, persecuted, greatly abused. Nobody at our colleges are out protesting, are they? How many protests do you see because of what's happening in Africa? And not just Africa, by the way, is a continent, a lot of countries there. Sudan's in a tremendous civil war that, you know, that should be on our news, and it's not. But just to point out, it is happening. Nevertheless, Christianity is growing. And now, somebody would say, well, but I've seen them on there, and it's mostly, you know, they may not all be, this is the breakdown of African religions today. This, because they look like, a lot of times they'll show somebody because the cameraman probably doesn't know the difference. So he shows somebody that looks like, well, they're Catholic or they're Orthodox or something like that. The Catholic, 22%, Orthodox, 6.8. The majority is Protestant. Now, just so we're clear, I know we're not Protestant. You know Baptist is not Protestant. We did not protest. That's what that means. The Catholic Church in those days, because we were never in it, and so Baptists were outside of it the whole time. I've got a lot of books on church history if you want to wade through it. But in fact, we were never part of it, so we weren't really ever Protestant. But that group right there is generally evangelical. Does that mean they're all independent Baptists? No, it does not mean that. But it does mean likely that there's a lot of people in there that understand that Jesus saves and understands the importance of talking to other people and winning them to Christ. Many, many in Africa, that is what is going on. So what is happening here as we set things up is, remember I showed you Nigeria. Remember I showed you how big it's going to get. I mean, it's one of the countries. In fact, let me show you this one. But how it's setting up is like these three and some of these nations, and this is right here area, and especially down like right about there, is set up for a Christian kind of big group of Arabs and big group of Christians, and we're going to see how it goes. One thing that's going to happen, if you look at Daniel chapter 11, look at verse 41, Daniel 11, verse 41. The first word is he. Who is that? That is the Antichrist. So this happens after the rapture. I'm just going to tell you that for sure. The rapture will be done by then, but this is one thing that's going to happen. He shall enter also into the glorious land. Where's that? That's Israel. That's where he comes down. And will at least be in Israel. Look at this, though. Many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. Now, those areas right there that will escape today, Edom are the Palestinians, but what that's talking about right there is when Daniel wrote this, this would be pretty much Jordan. You could think of what's called the West Bank and Jordan. In other words, that area somehow is going to escape by some miracle, probably because that is where God is going to, when he said, I'm going to send Israel to the wilderness, protect them for 3.5 years, must be right there because they escape out of his hand. Look at verse 42. He shall stretch forth, the Antichrist shall stretch forth his hand upon the countries and the land of Egypt, right here, shall not escape. But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps right here. These three nations are going to be at his steps. Isn't it? It is significant that those are some of the countries where there's massive growth today of various things. It is significant that Iran is working with them and trying to cultivate them on their side. And it is significant that there's also, of course, a group of Christians there, because some of these things, not necessarily this, some of these things are going to happen, maybe even in our lifetime. Verse 40, not this, but some of these things and the buildup. It just tells you we're in the last days. Look at verse 44. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. I mean, it's going to be a war, bloody war with the Antichrist. He shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Between what two seas? The Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea. That's what it's talking about in Israel. He's going to plant his palace in Jerusalem. And of course, Paul wrote to us in Thessalonians that he's going to walk in the temple of God, declaring himself to be God, isn't it? That's what he's talking about right here. But is it going to work? Therefore shall he go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. He shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. I could go on, but you get the idea. I mean, what he's going to do is not sustainable. We know in the last days, 10 large kings are going to give their power to him for him to rule and reign. He's going to destroy 3 of them, but he's going to rule and reign and take a lot of control away from, probably even control Babylon by that time and so forth. But he will, the Bible always tells us how it's going to end. He's going to come to his end. And what we're seeing today is kind of a setup for that. Now, this map is probably good and bad, but I show it to you for interest here. This is a population, a percent population of Christian, and of course it's got us here at 65 to 80. You know, I wish 65 to 80 in the United States were saved. It tells me right away there a lot of people identify, if you ask them, as Christian, but whether they're really saved or not, I wouldn't say. I would just say this, the statistics would say we've got 246 million people that in the United States saved or that are Christians. That does not mean, I believe, that 246 million are going to be raptured. You've got to believe in Jesus Christ. You can't just say I'm a Christian. You know, you've got to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. But you can look up here and say that when the rapture happens, those dark blue areas, a lot of people are going to go up and meet the Lord in the air, aren't they? I mean, I'm using Scripture. They're going to go up and meet a lot of those folks, and it is going to change the world. And what is left? What is left? So, again, I'm not saying everybody's gone here, but go with me for just a second. After the rapture, what's left? Right here. Again, I'm not saying nobody in there's saved. I'm just using big, broad brush. Everybody got that? It's a wide brush here. And where did I say the population is growing in the next 25 years? Right in here. Is that an accident? Well, I think not. Accidents don't just happen, do they? I'll show you a couple other things. This is a hard chart to understand, but this is 2017 on this side. This is 2100 on this side. So not 2050, but 2100. So this is just saying China's got 1.4 billion people right now, and by 2100, they're going to have half of that, because China had the one-child policy. And they, I mean, everybody that gets up today and says, oh, man, China, you know, we're worried about China. Just wait a few years. They're going to shrink to half, and it's going to be a huge difficulty for them, because China is not really a high-tech innovative kind of place. They're huge. They're mostly a manufacturing place. Now, they're smart, great, efficient, etc., but they're a manufacturing place, and this is going to rock the world as this starts to happen. That's a lot of people to disappear out of a place that manufactures most of the world's goods. It will greatly change the world. Right here is India. India's going to be number one. Go from number two to number one. Who's number three? Way down here is who? Nigeria. All the way up to number two. Wow. Yeah. All the way up to number two. What's Christian nation? Nigeria. Not everybody, I'm just saying. By and large, Christian nation, Nigeria, India, China. For what it's worth, I'm not making any comment here. I'm trying to be negative. I'm just saying, just to show you also how things are shaping up. I've shown you something similar to this before, but if you just name CEOs of large companies that all of us in this room would know, every one of them is of Indian origin. Every one. I'm not being negative on that. But this is FedEx, Alphabet or Google, Microsoft, Adobe, IBM. You know, Palo Alto. I mean, I could name a bunch more. Micron. I could name a bunch more. Just point that out. Some of our very largest companies. In fact, in January, whoever becomes president, there will be in that group of four: president, president's wife, vice president, vice president's wife. There will be someone there with Indian descent in the White House in January. I'm just putting all that together to say that when we look at the demographics, we look at who's talking to who, who's getting on whose side. When we read the Word of God, it is shaping up. It is shaping up exactly like the Lord told us it would be. Now, I am out of time. I didn't even get to talk yet. I'm 2 minutes. You probably thought, well, he's going to get up and talk about those exploding pagers. I saved quite a few slides to get it. That would be my, highlight, and didn't even quite get there, but I think the other is very important for us. I will say this. That's quite some technology, isn't it? You're just sitting there. How many of you have ever used a pager? Yeah, everybody, a lot of people had. In the 1980s, how many of you still use a pager? No, nobody today, of course, because everybody put them down. But no, I haven't used one. I mean, those things haven't been around 30 years. But you had it, and you could use it to talk to people. I know companies that had intercompany channels on their pager, and you could just talk within your company, and it was all typed and so forth. And apparently, to stay off the cell phone towers where you can be listened to and so forth, Hezbollah was using those pagers among themselves, and somebody figured that out. And I will just tell you this, and then they said, well, I don't know who made them, Taiwan and Bulgaria, and they both denied they made them. I don't know how that, I still don't know exactly how they happened. The first day was pagers. And the second day, they assumed that anybody that didn't get with the pagers would use their walkie-talkie, which is what they did. And then they blew up the walkie-talkies the second day. I mean, and then the IDF came in there and started. I mean, the thing here is they started hitting them because the whole. This is in northern Israel. So what's happening is Gaza's about done. They leave some people there to finish that one up, and they move to the north because one third of Israel is vacant. People have been living in a hotel room in Tel Aviv or somewhere for a year because they couldn't live in the north because the Hezbollah was bombing them and putting rockets in there from the north. And so they've said, look, we're going to move back home. Israel is going to go back home, and to do that, they're going to start fighting in the north. And so they got rid of quite a few of their leaders. And now they are immediately the first days of pagers. The second day was the walkie-talkies. The third day they started on the launchers. Why the launchers? Well, because that's if you have a bow and arrow and you don't have the bow, it's hard to make that arrow. That's what they're hitting. Those launchers are what they're really hitting. And you can see, and this is a thing from the third day. And the fighting and where they were hitting those launchers. You can see what it caused. That's pretty rough. And of course, Nasrallah acknowledged that was an unprecedented defeat. Of course, they're top commander, I'm just moving through because I'm already over, top commanders were killed. I did want to just say this. One of those that was killed is the guy who was in charge of bombing our own embassy in Beirut in 1983, the guy at the top of this list, but quite a few of those commanders are killed. And so we'll watch it this week, but that thing is escalating, and of course this is all prophesied in Psalm 83 as it kind of goes. We're going to put all that together as we go. I got to dismiss, so let's pray and be dismissed. Thanks for your attention today. Sorry I went over. Father, we're thankful for your word, your blessings.